Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Kurt Woodsmith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
The Chronicles of Michael Christopher is available at coasttocoastam.com. Just link up to him through our guest page for tonight. You'll see him writing about not just Van Halen, but all sorts of things regarding music history. And so I go back to this point, though, Michael, which is that... We are just still, I think, appreciating what he did and his unique genius, and also for the fact that, oddly enough, and this doesn't happen very much in music, where he really started a band along with his brother, and that band survived a couple of major lineup changes over the years and still kept producing popular and worthy music.
Right. I think that over the years he had some issues with singers because he didn't really care about the vocalist or really the lyrics. He couldn't care less what they were singing about. At his core, he was a fan of the power trio. He was obsessed with Eric Clapton, but only the Cream era. And he loved the sound of the album Live Cream. And I think if it were up to him, he would be happy just playing with his brother Alex and later his son Wolfgang on bass. That was the ideal for him.
And Michael Anthony, who was obviously terrific. And what is interesting about that power trio thing, I think, is that some people have argued that that's the purest form of rock, in the sense that, like a triangle replicates a pyramid, it's sturdy from every direction. And if all three performers are equally yoked, you get these amazing albums like Cream, or you get the work of people like Van Halen, with or without a lead singer like David Lee Roth. But when David Lee Roth left, and I happen to be a fan of the Sammy Hagar period too, I think that was much to his credit as well, that the band's sound changed. I mean, there's no denying how it changed, but it was cool in kind of a whole new way. And that's like never happens.
Right. And there were two main differences between Sammy Hagar and David Lee Roth. The first is that Sammy Hagar is miles away a better singer. And the other is that Dave is a better lyricist by leaps and bounds than Sammy is. But with Sammy, Eddie felt that he could express himself more through his musical training, and the band incorporated a lot more keyboards into the group. Eddie was, of course, still able to shred. I mean, you listen to all those records that he did with Sammy, he's still ripping it up on guitar. But so many of those songs, I mean, you hear a song like When It's Love, the ballad, or Right Now, of course, they're all led by the keyboards and the piano.
Well, that and Love Walks In, which I'll be popping on later on as a bumper too, which I just happen to think is an amazing melody. But what's interesting about that is that Sammy Hagar was no slouch on the guitar either. I was a fan of him back in the Red days. You know, I remember him kind of when he was breaking. And so that was an interesting confluence that they were able to put together what something wasn't really considered a super group. It was Sammy Hagar has taken over the lead, but he could play guitar, not like Eddie, but he wasn't a bad lead guitar player on his own.
Right. Well, Sammy Hagar, of course, he was around one of the best teachers someone could have, and that's Ronnie Montrose when he was in the band Montrose.
Right. I love that.
Oh, what a great band.
Yeah. I love Montrose's version of Town Without Pity.
That's a great version of that.
Oh, my God. I love that song.
But when Sammy came into Van Halen, he was already a well-established solo artist, and he was playing arenas. And when he joined up with the band, it was pretty exciting for a lot of people because it was, in a way, like a supergroup. You had this well-established singer. They didn't just find a nobody. It wasn't like AC/DC when they found Brian Johnson, and it was somebody who's that guy? It's everybody knew I Can't Drive 55. Everybody knew Three Lock Box.
Right.
And it freed up Eddie with Sammy's guitar playing. It freed up Eddie to explore different textures within his own music and within his own band.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I like how you're talking about that. There's no mystery surrounding the death of Eddie Van Halen. I mean, this was semi-predictable in a sad way, especially when you see those early photos of the band, and there's Eddie Van Halen with that distinctive cigarette stuck on his lower lip while he's playing, you know, for hours on end.
Right.
And I mean, you hate to see it, you hate to think about that, but it's a good reminder that there are, you know, health implications that come from smoking, and this is one of those. It ends people's lives too early, too often. But what is interesting to me is that there was a kind of, he was able to capture some real chemistry in his lifetime that not many people do. And in that, even with those lineup changes, he was able to come up, at least for several albums at a time, with other performers, some pretty unique sounds through that chemistry. And that's the mystery. That's so elusive because so many other bands could never pull it off. I mean, when Freddie Mercury died, I mean, Queen still tours, and there's been a couple of people in lead position, and that's kind of cool, but it'll never be Queen. And it was still Van Halen, even with Sammy Hagar as lead vocalist.
Right. Especially when you have the guitarist who is the centerpiece of the band, it's really hard to find a great band to get around him. There's dozens of phenomenal guitarists out there, but they never find the great band to surround themselves with. And Eddie was able to do that twice, which is, it's unheard of in music. And again, he had to grow a lot with Sammy Hagar, and I think that contributed to the longevity of the band. They were able to survive the influx of grunge music because they didn't sound like a band from the Sunset Strip. They didn't sound like a hair metal band.
Yeah.
It was a constant evolution within the group.
That's true. Yeah, I love that. In fact, that's a really good point because there were so many Van Halen wannabe bands that came out, and they were good. They had an album or two and always a couple of good tracks. And, you know, I'm always game for a little Great White every so once in a while, or Rat, or, you know.
You throw them round and round, you've got me all in. But there's one main difference with Eddie and all those other guitarists in those bands. You never saw him without a guitar in his hands. And by all accounts, he wasn't really comfortable without it in his hands. And that's how he chose to speak to people, not through interviews or coming up to the microphone during concerts. And when the band wasn't on the road or on the stage, 90% of the time, Eddie would be in the studio or in his hotel room practicing. Now, he did his share of partying, and that's well documented.
Oh, yeah.
He was most at home with his guitar, and I think that's one of the things that separated him from other musicians who were watching the clock in the studio, waiting for the time there to end so they could get out, go to the clubs, experience their fandom. They wanted to get all their accolades from being famous, and I really don't think Eddie cared much for that. He cared about the music.
We're talking with music historian Michael Christopher. You can link up to him through coasttocoastam.com. Everything you said is true. I think what's interesting to point out, though, is that I met him a couple of times. Did you ever meet him?
Well, no. I met him in 1998, but it was in one of those backstage kind of cattle call things where you go up, do the quick meet and greet, get a picture with a bunch of people that you don't even know, and then you move on. So you get to say something like, thank you very much for the music, and move along. Next.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I had too. Although I was the morning host on a rock station at the time, so I got a little bit more time. But it was very much like the same thing. And somebody asked me on Twitter about this tonight, and I told them that my memory of every time I met the Sammy Hagar led Van Halen backstage was just how nice they were. And they were never, I mean, I've been backstage all my whole life, right? And I mean, it got to a point where it was just another day at the office. As cool as it is to meet famous people and get autographs and whatever, and I'm as dopey as the next guy, but here we were all geeking out because it was when Eddie Van Halen walked into the room, and he was just perfectly nice about it. Introverted, but he didn't make anybody feel uncomfortable for the fawning. And that's, I measure somebody's worth on that. I don't know if everybody's had that same experience, but that's how I will remember it. And I saw it happened twice. So I had a feeling.
So much about Eddie Van Halen that he would almost go out of his way to make people feel more comfortable around him because he knew what it was like. He knew what it was like to be, to sit there and be in the presence of one of your idols and freak out a little bit. But he wanted to make whoever it was, whether it was a fan coming up to meet him for the first time or some guitarist that was even very well known on his own. I mean, there's legions of guitarists out there who are well known by their first and last name that they were quaking in their boots when they first met him. And he was just as kind as could be with them.
Yeah, like Joe Satriani, Steve Vai. I mean, some other people are pretty darn good. And, you know, people forget, like, he also had a little bit of fun with doing the whole thing, the Beat It solo, right? And working with Michael Jackson and Quincy Jones. That seems so out of place.
Well, he knew Quincy Jones, and that's one of those great stories in rock and roll where Quincy Jones called up Eddie, and he said, hey, Eddie, it's Quincy. And Eddie said, Quincy who? He said, it's Quincy Jones. And Eddie hung up the phone on him.
And
Quincy
right.
called back, and he said, hey, it really is Quincy. And he said, what do you want? He's like, look, I'm producing Michael Jackson's new album. You know, he did the album Off the Wall. He's got this new album that I'm working on, and I'd like you to come down and maybe play a guitar solo or something on it. And he goes, yeah, no problem, Quincy. I'll come down. I'd be honored to come down and work with you. And because Michael Jackson at that point wasn't Michael Jackson. So Eddie...
Well, Off the Wall was pretty big, but it didn't blow up like Thriller did. I mean, right. You got to remember, it was already a number one album on R&B and pop charts. But I'll go with you on Thriller was a whole new level. That's just all there is to it.
Yeah, that's just worldwide, into the stratosphere. You could go into some cave somewhere and somebody had the Thriller record.
Right.
But when Eddie did go into the studio to work on the track, that became Beat It, he just did two improvised solos. They kind of melded the two of them together, and that was it. Walked out, and he was finished. Never got a dime for it, never asked for one, and it went on to become one of the biggest selling pop singles of all time.
Well, the album is still number one. The album, right? I believe Thriller is still the number one selling single album, not double album, but the number one selling single album.
Yes, it is. It is, and that's one of those things where you just marvel and say, wow, and he didn't get a dime for playing on that record.
Yeah.
And he really didn't care. I think an even funnier thing was that the band was off the road at the time. Van Halen was off the road. They were all doing their own things. He didn't think anyone would ever know. He thought that, no one's ever going to hear this. And there was a story where a couple weeks after the record came out, when Beat It came out, David Lee Roth had pulled into a 7-Eleven pick up some soda or whatever before he was going to the studio, and he heard Beat It blasting out of somebody's car. And he said, this guitarist, he's ripping off Eddie. He sounds just like Eddie. And he got to the studio. He was fuming. He said, you wouldn't believe it. Michael Jackson has this guy on his record. He sounds just like you. And Eddie, you know, bashfully kind of said, well, David, it is me. That's me on there. And they said, all right, well, what did we get for it? How much money did you make?
That's so David Lee Roth.
Oh, yeah.
Not to mention, in an odd sort of way, you know, everybody always accused David Lee Roth of selling out all the time, right? That he gave up on his rock roots. And even though Eddie Van Halen cut that solo, he never suffered that. it was always, in a way, because I was working in hard rock radio at the time, and it was always viewed the other way around, that he elevated Michael Jackson, not he lowered himself to perform on an R&B record or a non-metal album.
That's really interesting that you've mentioned that, because it would be looked at, if it was anybody else, like, oh, what are they doing? What, they're taking right. a step down by going into this other genre. And what it did was that brought Michael Jackson to the rock audience. That brought him to the audience
right.
that might not be into his music. And all of a sudden, they start thinking, wow, well, this Michael Jackson guy, he must be pretty cool. He's got Eddie Van Halen play on his record. He's got Paul McCartney on there. And we should give this guy a chance. And that's the rock world. And then next yep. thing you know, he transcends all genres. And a lot of that has to do with Eddie Van Halen.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern. And go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.